We'd recorded quite a few demo recordings, and I started to talk about whether she'd ever consider writing. She said she's not sure about writing songs, but she's written a lot of poems. She knew full well she'd been writing songs, but they were very personal songs.
That was the voice of Nick Shyamski, the first ever manager of the phenomenally talented and tragically troubled Amy Winehouse, who died of complications related to her bulimia and long-running addictions in 2010. And this has been a 007, back for another movie review, after a small hiatus to do with celebrating the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo. And if you want to see what I've been up to in the intervening weeks, you can check out the Twitter feed at RelivWaterloo, all one word. So we're back today to talk about a very tragic young woman and a wonderfully balanced and insightful and intimate documentary made by the filmmaker Asif Kapadia, who may be known to you for his wonderful documentary Senna, about, again, the tragically killed young racing driver Ayrton Senna, which moved me to tears, partly because I was very involved in that story as a young girl and I remember watching Senna's death at Imola. I found that that film was tremendously well balanced. But if there was any criticism, it was that it was a story that needed a villain. And to be sure, Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost at the time did have this awful rivalry, and there was a lot of politics in Formula One racing. But very much Alain Prost came off as the evil villain of the piece. So as I went into the documentary, Amy, I was a little bit worried because this is a singer who was so talented and achieved such fame with her album Back to Black that there were many conflicting voices around her. And whenever someone dies of a drug overdose or perceived drug overdose, then there is this need to apportion blame. And I was wondering who was going to get that. And of course, a lot of controversy surrounds this documentary, I think unfairly, actually. But Amy Winehouse's father, Mitch Winehouse, who controls her estate, has come out and said that he thinks that the portrayal of him is very unfair and that he's considering legal action. Again, I think this is unfair, but it just means that going into this film, you have this certain expectation that maybe it's going to try and portray certain individuals in a very negative light. I'm happy to say that this is a movie that does two things. It shows Amy in all her glory, her talent, her wit, her charisma. And I think sometimes in the paparazzi nastiness that surrounded her death and, you know, all those very famous YouTube captures of her not performing in an inebriated state, you forget just what a talent she was, how vital. And it's kind of ironic that in this whole documentary, this young dead woman is the most vital force in it. And I think we should absolutely be grateful to Asif Kapadia for restoring her to the position she should hold in all our memories. The second thing that I think the film does really well is that it uses her lyrics, it foreshadows her lyrics. They're often the words written in her handwriting are on screen, and you see just how personal they are, how much they are themselves mini narratives of the major events in her life. And by going across those lyrics and using those almost as the sort of the chapter headings of this film, you almost get the feeling that Amy's telling her own story. And it's a troubled story, it's a nuanced story, even from her early childhood, which means that we can't just say, oh, that guy's the baddie and that guy is the goodie. I mean, yes, some people come off of it worse than others, but it's so well supported in the documentary evidence, not just from Amy's lyrics, but from intimate friends who, for the first time, friends who knew her from school and had vowed at her funeral never to talk to the press, who have been won over by the credibility of the documentary filmmakers to give their side of the story. So this film drips with authenticity and integrity. It doesn't simplify anything. It tells you that this is a charismatic but sometimes manipulative woman who probably did give out mixed signals, who was an addict, who was suffering with bulimia and anxiety from a young age. let's go back to the beginning. And the beginning, as told by this picture, is really Amy as a young teenager, very talented, already writing lyrics, but troubled. Her parents have split up when she's very young. Her father had an affair and left her. And you get the very strong sense that she never recovered from this loss, that he was this great absence in her childhood. And so much of what she was trying to do was to relate back to him. She is a jazz singer. She is informed by the greats. And actually, I thought it a little bit weird in a way that the documentary doesn't touch on the fact that her family were all jazz musicians. So she had this in the house. And that she had been through, you know, stage schools. So she was very much being groomed for the spotlight. In a way, the documentary, by not so much showing that, makes it feel a little bit like she's this sort of prodigy springing up through the cracks in the concrete of North London. But actually, you know, there was more heritage to it than that. But what we do have is this lovely home video footage from her best friends, and you know, it just shows her being funny and a teenager and insecure and spotty, but just full of life, full of talent. And it's wonderful. You see a side of Amy that in later years is blurred. And I really appreciate that first half of the movie. Also because she's funny. And you would imagine the documentary about Amy Winehouse would be just very dark and very despairing. But it's such a pleasure to spend time in her company. And we meet the guy who, if you want to make a hero of the piece, is her first manager. And I mean, they're all so young. Nick Shyamsky's just 19, Amy's just 16. He spots her talent and gets her through to her first record deal and the first album, Frank. And he really cares for her. They're a real family. It's all caught on video. And it's wonderful. But she has, from the moment he's met her at 16, already been smoking pot and on antidepressants and bulimic. So this is a woman who has, from early teenage years, been battling problems, and problems that her parents didn't really know how to deal with. So her father was absent. Her mother, tragic interview, just says, you know, I knew she was having problems. I just didn't know how to cope. It was beyond me. So accepting, you know, that this was just beyond her. It's awful to hear. So before Back to Black is written, Amy is, of course, flush with money. She's got the first album deal. She moves out of home at a very young age with her best friend, and that gives her the scope to drink and smoke. And you get the feeling that she went off the rails then. And it's kind of interesting for me because I always thought of Back to Black as the turning point. And it kind of is, because that's the point at which she's meeting her soon-to-be husband, Blake Fielder Civil, who is also an addict. And she moves on to hard drugs, so crack cocaine, heroin. But what's interesting in this documentary is that before even that occurs, she has been identified as an addict by her manager, Nick Shyamsky, and a good friend. And he reaches out. He wants to intervene. He wants to get her into rehab. And there is a suggestion that if she had gone to rehab at that stage, this is before Back to Black, before the paparazzi, before she's super famous, before she's on heroin and crack cocaine, maybe they could have helped her then. And of course, you don't just go to one rehab and it works, but maybe if they had started that cycle of recovery, then it might have worked. And it really feels like a missed chance. And of course, at that pivotal moment, suddenly Mitch Winehouse reappears in the story. And Amy says, I'll go if my father says I should. And he says, no, she doesn't need to. And that's that famous lyric from the song Rehab. You know, my daddy says I'm fine. And so it's not that Mitch Winehouse is being painted as an evil villain. He probably wasn't as aware of what was going on then. He probably wasn't in touch with it enough to know that she needed the help. But it is a pivotal moment where she reaches out, and sadly a chance is missed. Maybe it was the chance, who knows? You can't write counterfactual history. So then we move into kind of the second half of the documentary, where this is the bit we're all familiar from, the paparazzi shots at the time, the YouTube, the huge fame with Back to Black, where of course everyone suddenly now wants a piece of her. And there is a tragedy here where she's trying to write. The only thing that gives her justification in her life is the integrity of doing her music. And she can't do it because she's in this fog of drugs. She's trying to escape. She's trying to hide from all this craziness. And there is a moment of peace. She goes to St. Lucia, to the Caribbean, and escapes. And again, I guess this is the second point where Mitch Winehouse might feel he's portrayed unfairly. She asks her dad to come out and be with her. And now he's ever present, right? Now he's a manager. So suddenly he's not present for 15 years. She's famous and he's everywhere. I think that speaks for itself. But he goes out to the Caribbean and he takes a film crew with him. He takes a reality film crew, TV crew. So was that helpful? Probably not. And some of that footage is incredibly hard to watch, and I'm sure it's hard to watch for the family. So you basically just get the spiral downwards. The spiral downwards, very poor performances live. The marriage that was toxic. But it's hard to blame. Blake Field, a civil, comes across as a really unlikable guy, but he himself is an addict. We can't expect him to be caring for a woman or not to exploit the money that's available for drugs, because when you're in the addiction, all you care is about the addiction. So it's kind of, it's just a horrible situation all round. What I think is really amazing, though, about this documentary is that that famous footage of concerts, particularly the one in Eastern Europe where she just refuses to sing one of the final concerts on that European tour, you suddenly understand what she was doing. That in those final days when she's divorced, she kind of has a period where she does clean herself up a little bit. This huge European tour is booked. She doesn't want to go on it. She wants to go off and do creative projects with Questlove and get back to her more sort of jazz singing roots. And so she self-sabotages. She gets horribly drunk. She thinks that will stop the tour. It doesn't. She's forced on stage. And what the fans may have previously thought was her being indulgent and addicted and just, you know, wasting their time and money, you see that this is an act of desperation. She knows exactly what she's doing when she walks out on stage and doesn't sing. She's just getting off that treadmill. She's refusing to be part of it. And in a sense, this moment that has been portrayed as something symbolizing failure and indulgence actually becomes a kind of a strong moment in a way, where she just refuses to be a performing monkey, performing songs from back catalog that's no longer relevant to her when she just wants to be doing new music. So it's a tragic moment in all sorts of ways. I guess you're getting from this that I think Amy is a really good documentary. I think it's absolutely fair. I think the criticism of Asif Kapadia's intentions and integrity in portraying the people around Amy is just unfounded. It shows a nuanced, troubled, difficult situation. You've got addiction, you've got bulimia, you've got depression, but also great talent and great vitality and people who loved her. And that's what Amy gives us. That's what this documentary gives us. It gives us this young, beautiful woman staring at us on home footage, singing. And that's what I'll remember, rather than the hounded look of a drunk Amy staring at a paparazzi lens. And I think any fans of her music have to be thankful for that insight and for that displacement of tragedy for vitality. So, a wonderful film. I do hope you'll check it out. And if you agree or disagree with my take, please feel free to leave a comment on the written review at beena007.com. Amy is rated R and has a running time of 128 minutes. The movie played Cannes 2015 and is currently on release in the Netherlands. It will be released on July 3rd in the UK, Ireland and USA, on July 8th in France, on July 9th in Greece and Hungary, on July 10th in Finland, on July 16th in Germany, and on the 17th in Sweden. Thank you for listening.